You're listening to Hey Bitches Podcast, episode 136. Hey Bitches, what is up, you guys? It's your girl, Carly. Welcome back to Hey Bitches Podcast. Hope you guys are having an incredible day. Today we are back at it again with another episode of Hey Bitches, all about my influencer life. We're doing an influencer Q&A, ladies and gentlemen. How much money I make, how to grow on social media, the structure of my business, lots of stuff. Okay, I'm very excited to get into this episode. You guys really had a lot to ask me, you had a lot to say, and today we are answering your questions. So without further ado, let's get into the episode. Okay, so like I was saying, you guys had a lot of questions for me. Over on YouTube, I actually have already done this video where I answered like half of these questions because you guys had a lot to ask, okay? So if there was a question that wasn't answered in today's episode, it probably was answered on the YouTube video. So I will link it in the show notes so you can go and check it out. I wanted to share with you guys the questions that I guess I didn't answer on YouTube that I'm going to answer on here, all about my influencer life. And when I put this question sticker out, I really should have known because y'all want to know everything, every damn single detail about me and my life and my influencer life and my business and my career and all of those things. And today we are answering them. Okay, so before we get into it though, I'm here to give you a little TLDR on how I became an influencer, my little background. If you guys are unfamiliar, this is kind of how it happened. And so I started a blog in 2014 when I was still in high school. I was a professional cheerleader at the time, and I was really set on going to musical theater school. I applied to musical theater school and I got rejected. And when I got rejected, it felt like my world was falling apart because that was really the only career path I had been working towards. I took the year off, I guess I took a gap year between high school and university. And in that gap year, I was staying a professional cheerleader. I did all of those things and my family was like, hey, we think you'd be really good at like marketing or advertising or that kind of thing. The high school that I went to was very philanthropic and we did a lot of charity work and we did a lot of community work and we raised a lot of money and awareness and stuff like that. And they're like, I think you could use those skills and like maybe do business or marketing or advertising. And I was like, okay. I didn't really know much about it at the time, really at all. I was like, okay, well, me and my family probably knows me best. I'll look into it. And then I got a hunger for trying to be a business person because then I applied to business school, but this was in like the middle of the year. So school doesn't even start until September anyways. So I had months and months and months before I even one knew if I was accepted or I guess, or two was able to start doing business school and learning business school, but I was very hungry for it. So I was like, okay, I have my little blog. I'm like blogging, I'm doing all these things and I'm trying to figure it out. And I was like, what else can I do? And so I was looking up online marketing, all of this. I had the blog. I started getting into Instagram. I started getting into YouTube. This is like year jumps. Okay. I started getting into Instagram. I got into business school. I was really involved with business school. I thought it was fantastic. I was working in like new jobs and fields. I was being interns in a place where they didn't even really even have interns. I would just kept showing up. I was learning more. I was getting new jobs. I was starting YouTube. I was starting the podcast. I was working corporately. I dropped out of university. I went back to school. I declared my major as marketing and my minor as intellectual property law. I finished my degree. All of this time I was doing Instagram, I was doing TikTok, I was doing YouTube, I was doing the podcast, obviously in their respective years as I came up. And then eventually I lost my job for the second time. There's a whole episode about when it happened, like very close to the time that it happened. If you guys would like to listen to it, it's called Bloggergate. I really think it's like episode 4 or something like that. Like it's an early episode. But anyway, I lost my job the second time and I was like, okay, fuck this. I'm going into influencer stuff full time. I went to New York with a bunch of my friends. I came home and I have never had another corporate job since. Since then, this is now the third year. I'm going into the third year of being a full-time influencer, making money 100% on my own from my social media influence. I have since then launched things like Confidence Club, which is my size-inclusive athleisure line. Come As You Are is in the works, which is my sex toy company. And then a lot of other things have happened. I mean, the podcast has been nominated for a bunch of things. I've been honored for awards. I have a team. I do all these things. And that is, like I said, the TLDR of the come up of my influencer journey, just to give you kind of like background on it, because I think a lot of people a lot of the time think that people just pop off overnight. And with TikTok, we have seen a rise of obviously popping off seemingly overnight. But I have been working at this for 8 years now, and I've been in the industry on both sides in terms of being a corporate person and also being a self-employed person. And I also, too, have a traditional education in business and all of those types of things. So that is the TLDR on my influencer journey. If you were unaware, there it is. I'm sure that I've actually gone very in-depth in it in a lot of different places, Instagram, the podcast episodes, YouTube, that kind of thing. So if you want to hear my whole backstory, it's on all of the platforms, but that is the condensed version, just to give you more context before I get into these Q&As. So like I said, I chose all of these questions that weren't already answered on YouTube. So if you're looking for specific ones, or you asked a specific question and you're like, Carly, you didn't answer it here, I probably answered it on YouTube. So just a PSA, but let's get into these questions. Question number one is, what should you do when you start getting brand deals, i.e. saving for taxes? I actually have a full episode with my personal accountant all about taxes, self-employment work, all of that, write-offs, everything. And if you are a new creative, you should absolutely listen to it, because my accountant specifically, she specifies, I guess, in creatives and people who are self-employed, who have their own companies, that kind of thing. And it was a really good, very informative episode, especially like around this time of year, because it is tax season. And I'm also not a professional, because I failed accounting 3 times in my university degree. So I am not an accountant, but my accountant is an accountant. And we did a whole episode together about being a small business and making sure you have your finances in order. So you really should listen to that episode for more pointed advice. But here are some other things that I started doing when I first kind of got a lot more brand deals and I was doing more business. My rule of thumb then and still today is I put away 30% of whatever deal that I have been paid for into a savings account. And I do this because I, until recently, was a sole proprietorship. So that means every single dollar went through my personal bank account, and then I had to remit taxes at the end of the year, versus I got the money taken off by like my company or whatever, because I was self-employed, right? So I put 30%, which is like about the amount that I would have to owe back to the government in taxes, into a savings account. I wouldn't touch that money because I knew I would have to give it back to the government, and nothing is worse than having to owe money and then you not having any money to owe. I would put it into a savings account. And something that I recently started doing is actually remitting my taxes quarterly. So instead of doing it like where I'm saving every single, like 30% of every single brand deal that I'm making, and I'm saving it like in one savings account over the course of the year, what I started doing was actually remitting it quarterly. So every 3 months, there is like a specific date on the CRA website. I'm sure it's the same in America with the IRA. Like, obviously look it up, I'm not American. You can start remitting your taxes quarterly. You can essentially prepay for your return, or I guess your file period. I started remitting them quarterly, and I found that easier for me personally, because nothing is worse than having all of this money saved up. And I say saved, I guess in quotes, saved up, which is not even really savings, because you owe that money to the government, and then you just see it grow and grow and grow and know that you can't use it for anything because you have to pay it to the government. So what I do instead now, instead of, you know, remitting thousands and thousands of dollars at the end of the year, I remit it quarterly, so it stings a little bit less and I miss it a lot less. I just make sure that I know the day that I have to remit, and I'm making sure that that 30% is going to the savings account at all times. And then I'll go on the CRA website, I will type in the amount in that savings account, and then I will just make sure that that money gets transferred into the account that the CRA takes my money out of, to make sure that it goes to them. And then it'll literally sit there with the CRA until I file my taxes for the next year. And then when they evaluate my taxes, they'll be like, oh, okay, cool. Well, let's say you owe, like, for example, let's say I owe $20,000 in taxes and I have remitted $5,000 for the past 3 quarters. So that's $15,000 that I've already remitted to the government. So they have it in the reserve under me specifically. And they're like, okay, well, she already paid $15,000. And when they're going through and they're auditing and they're checking to make sure that my tax return is right and all that kind of stuff, they see that I already paid $15,000, and they go, okay, well, now you only owe us five. And I think that is so much better because you're not getting hit with like a massive bill at the end of the year. Like the difference between a $5,000 bill and a $20,000 bill is massive. And I think that for me personally, doing the quarterly remittance just helps me out so much more because I just don't, I didn't enjoy last year getting a $23,000 tax bill. And I just don't want to do it again. So instead, I remit quarterly. But if you are also at a point where you don't really have to do that, I guess you do have to in general. But if you are at a point where you are making brand deal money, take 30% of it and put it in a savings account and then choose if you want to remit quarterly or remit yearly, figure that out for you. But take 30% and put it in a savings account. Another big thing to do, like when you're first getting started, is to have a really good invoicing process. So I use Wave, waveapps.com for all of my invoicing. It is a free app. I use it for my sole proprietorship and for my corporation because now I am two different entities, but I use it for both. I use it to keep track of my invoices, of the amount of money that I have made in brand deals. You can also actually, I'm pretty sure, use it as a bookkeeping software. My accountant is also my bookkeeper, so she does my books month over month, but I'm pretty sure Wave does it too, but it just has like, it's confusing to me and I just don't want to deal with it, so I don't. But if you are looking for that, I think that is an option. But Wave I like the most because it helps me keep track of everything. It helps me to also identify like goals. So they have a sales tab in Wave, which is essentially where I generate all of my invoices. And it tells me when I look at it as a whole, this is how much money I've made in brand deals this year. And I think that's really motivating. I can keep track of it. I can be like, okay, this is where I'm at. Maybe I'm not like 100% tracking it in my Notion or whatever. It'll always be in my Wave. And I love that too, because I can always reference it back. I can always look at it back. I can always be like, okay, well, I did this and I got paid this and I XYZ and everything is in order. And that is what I absolutely love about Wave. So I love Wave. Get yourself a good invoicing software. Like I said, Wave I think is like really the best one. I know that other people use QuickBooks, I'm pretty sure, which is also like a bookkeeping software that probably also does invoicing. I don't use it, but I could not recommend Wave enough. The final things, always keep your receipts. And if you can hire an accountant or a bookkeeper, do it. It's very worth it, especially if you are self-employed. And like in this question, like if you are getting brand deals, you're making self-employment money. A lot of us don't even know how to do that and file our taxes as if we're self-employed. And it's hard. And making sure that you have the right receipts and you know how to do the right write-offs is also hard. And so I would definitely advocate for hiring an accountant or a bookkeeper and then also keeping your receipts. For me personally, I've actually talked about this a lot where I don't exactly know what I can and can't write off. So I scan basically everything into this app that me and my accountant use, basically send over my receipts and share my receipts to her. And then she goes through and she identifies what is actually a write-off and what is not. And that's how we do it. Because like I said, I don't know 100% what is and what is not a write-off because this is not my job. I'm not an accountant. Those are all of the things that I think I would say. I would say put 30% away, figure out if you want to remit your taxes quarterly or yearly, keep your receipts, have a great invoicing process, and if you can, hire an accountant. Next question is, what are some tech, apps, tools that every influencer should have in their toolkit? My number one love of my life is Notion. I love Notion. I use it for literally everything. I have done a Notion video on Instagram about how I use it for my content calendar, but I also use Notion to organize all of my brand deals. I use Notion to do all of my, obviously, my content calendars. I use it to have pitch trackers, my finances. I also have a personal Notion outside of my agency one that I use for branding databases for my clothing line and my sex toy line. I use it for an employee directory. I use it for important forms. I use Notion for literally everything. It is the number one workflow work tool that I use that I do not see right now anything being better than Notion. And I love it so fucking much. So if you've never used it, I get it also too. I feel like it can be really overwhelming because it can do everything. You just sit there and you look at a blank page and you're like, how the fuck do I set this shit up? And I think that if I didn't have it set up by my agency in a way that like gave me a little bit of structure, I wouldn't have been able to emulate it as much as I do now. But I really do love Notion. They have tons of templates, tons of resources. The team is really responsive if you ever have questions. So I would say the number one thing that if I could put you onto anything, it would be Notion. I'm also a huge like spreadsheet person. I specifically use Google spreadsheets because I have a Mac and I don't do Excel, but I'm a huge spreadsheet person for a multitude of things. The things that I use probably the most for spreadsheets though are my aggregate growth spreadsheet as well as my finances spreadsheet. So obviously my finances is things like tracking my RRSP contributions or my TFSA contributions or how much tax I owe, how much income I have, doing like the budgeting, all that kind of stuff. And then my aggregate growth spreadsheet essentially is exactly what it sounds like. I put in a percentage and it aggregates the percentage of growth over the amount of the year. It spits out the numbers that I need to grow every single month to hit the certain goals over and over that I get from like having that percentage number. So it'll aggregate 12%, for example, over 12 months. And it'll tell me, okay, well, if you're at this many influencer or not influencers, if you're at this many Instagram followers right now, this is how many you have to have month over month on a 12% aggregate growth scale. So I love Google Forms for that, or not forms, Google Sheets for that. I love it because it does all of the math and all the calculations on its own. I'm sure I could probably also do it in Notion, but I've just been doing it on Google for so long that I just like don't want to switch over. And I'm unsure if Notion kind of does the same type of thing. I haven't tried. I'm sure it does, but like I just like it separate. I like a good spreadsheet is what I'm trying to say. Something that I also love is Facebook Creator Studio. And I think a lot of people sleep on Facebook Creator Studio, or they just don't even know what it is. But essentially Facebook Creator Studio is what I use to schedule all of my Instagram posts on my personal Instagram account. So you can do desktop scheduling on Facebook Creator Studio. And I think I had just gotten to this so early before Instagram introduced desktop scheduling from Instagram, the website, and I have always just ran with it. But Facebook Creator Studio also gives you a lot more insights into the backend analytics. It gives you a lot more depth into what you're seeing versus like what you see on the Instagram app, because obviously Facebook is the parent company of Instagram. It just gives you a lot more insight and I really like it. And it allows you to, like I said, schedule desktop. Because I sit at my desktop all day, that's what works way, way better for me. I'm also not a big visual planner. Like I don't need a Planoly or anything like that. I do it mostly in Notion. So I like just having the workflow of like being able to do it all in Notion and then copy and pasting everything into Facebook Creator Studio and knowing that it'll go out. I think that's another big thing, is knowing that because Facebook owns Instagram, I'll never have to do it like a third-party authentication or like be worried that like the token wasn't properly attached or whatever and the post doesn't go out, because Facebook owns Instagram. Because of that, I love doing Facebook Creator Studio for those reasons, for my personal account. Now, I use Later, the scheduling software, for Hey Bitches and for Confidence Club, but that is because I have a team. So I have people who create those assets for me, and they need to be able to put those in there. I need to be able to approve them, and then they need to be able to schedule them. And they can't do that in Facebook Creator Studio because they'll have to be like logged in as me on Facebook. And obviously that I don't want that. So I use Later for Hey Bitches and for Confidence Club to schedule out those posts, because I don't do them personally. I have other people who do them for me. And I think it's a good little like collaboration type of tool. And if you do have somebody that you plan on bringing onto your team to do social stuff like that, if you don't want to just be doing it manually where you're sending it to them to their personal phone and they're uploading it like directly at the same time or whatever, Later is a really good option. Something that I fucking love lately is Canva Pro, okay? And I used to be an Adobe snob. I used to only use Photoshop. I used to only do Lightroom. I used to only do all these things. I would only do all of the Adobe things. And I'd be like, ugh, why would I do it in Canva? I could just fucking do it in Adobe. And it's true. I could just do I probably could do the same amount of things that I do in Canva in Photoshop. But it's just so much harder. Like, it really is just so much harder. Why would I figure out how to drag and drop a shape, do all those things, have to go into color picker, go into color palettes, do those things, change the colors, decide if I like it or not, when I literally could just open Canva and do that in like a click of a button and use a template and whatever? I could make Photoshop templates too, don't get me wrong, but Canva just like works better. It's more convenient, and it's also great if you have a team. I know that Canva also has a scheduler option, like you can schedule your Instagram posts as well. I just find that I like to make things kind of in verticals, so I will make the Instagram posts all within one kind of Canva page, and it'll just have multiple posts. But when I go to post on Instagram, I only want one of them to post, right? I don't want all like eight of them to post. And I just find that gets a little bit confusing. But I love Canva for content creation specifically. And I have the paid version because that allows you to do, you know, more elements or have transparent backgrounds or do the animations or whatever. I love it. It has really been a godsend. I was an original Canva stan and then I became an Adobe snob. And now I'm back on my Canva shit because it is fantastic. Something else that I use that I don't really talk about a lot because nobody really asked me about my email organization, but something I would love to put you guys onto is something called Sanebox. And Sanebox is something I use for my inbox. It is an AI that essentially figures out where to organize your emails into. And I have Sane Inbox. I also have Sane Later, Sane Archive, and Sane News. And essentially the AI works to understand my emailing patterns to sort everything into these certain inboxes. So the idea is that everything that hits my actual inbox, like my first, like my regular inbox tab, is stuff that is important to my inbox. And I love it. It helps me so much. Whenever I change my password for things and it disconnects from my Sane box, I'm like, why do I have so many fucking emails? And then I remember that my Sane isn't connected and it literally saves my life. It literally helps me stay sane. So Sanebox is fantastic. And then my last couple ones I really love are WeTransfer for sharing larger files. This is normally what I use just to send it to my podcast editor or my YouTube editor and stuff like that. And then I love Slack, obviously. We've probably all been acquainted with Slack for team communication, be that video calls, chat, regular calls. I love all of it. I love Slack. Next question we have is, how do you diversify your income? What are some different income streams? So if we're being honest, 99% of my income is from brand deals. And I honestly truly wish that that was different. I wish that I had more diverse income streams. I wish that I had, you know, less dependency on the brand deals. I wish that I had those types of things. But at the end of the day, I currently just don't. I don't see this brand deal income going anywhere or anything, but I do think it's very, very important to diversify your income so you're never reliant on just one thing, especially when you're self-employed. Here's the hard part. The hard part is it's hard. You have to really build like an entire separate reputation for whatever you're doing outside of being an influencer, be that like clothing or courses or, you know, services or whatever. And you also are probably going to have to invest either time or money into it. So it's really just taking on a larger burden, obviously for a more successful win in the end, but it is hard. Like if you're launching a clothing line, you're putting money into it, but you're also putting time into it because now you have to develop the brand. You have to spend more time talking to these manufacturers. You have to figure out import, export. You have to run the Instagram account. You have to do all these things. Same with courses. You have to be constantly advertising. You have to be up on your marketing. You have to be up on your emailing. You have to be a part of all these things. You have to invest this time and this money. And it's hard, especially too, when you are also doing brand deals full-time, when you already essentially have a full-time job and you're trying to essentially diversify your income by making another lane of a job. That's like kind of how I see it is like, even if it's part-time, you're already working 40 hours a week, more or less. Now you're adding yourself another 20 to diversify your income. And I get it. Like, I'm not saying that diversifying your income is a bad thing. I wish it was different for me and I wish it was set up in a different way. It is hard. And that's, I think, a big reason why I haven't like branched out of it as much as I want to or put as much of the time and the effort into it as I want to. But in 2020, it's something that I want to really get into is diversifying more of my income because I don't want to be 100% solely income reliant on just one thing because I feel like that also defeats the purpose of being self-employed. Like the whole point is flexibility and I just don't want to like feel like I'm putting all my eggs in one basket. So in 2022, I really want to diversify more. But to answer, I guess the other question is, what are different types of income streams? They can be really anything. So for influencers, a lot of it is like brand deals is an income stream, courses or online resources is an income stream, merch is an income stream, things like AdSense is also an income stream. I do get paid AdSense. Things like any type of revenue share from like podcasting platforms, TikTok is also a revenue income stream. It has a revenue share model. That type of stuff is very influencer-y on that side. And you can also do like other things, having a clothing line or having like a brand that is not necessarily like social media-y. You know, you could start a window washing company. You could start an XYZ. It's less about like what are the social media-y ways to diversify your income. And the question is, what diversifies your income? What are other ways that you can make this money? Where are the other streams? And there are so many different ways that you can do this. It could literally be like affiliate, for example. You could have affiliate income as a diversified income stream. If you're constantly promoting on social, or you have a blog that like does a lot of clicks and all of that, and then you're making the income from there, or you're selling a physical product, or your XYZ. Those are different ways to diversify your income. They always say that millionaires have like seven streams of different revenue. A lot of that probably comes from real estate. That's also like another diverse income section, I guess. Like you are a landlord, obviously, or you own something and then somebody else pays you to use it type of thing. That is another diversified income stream as well. But essentially, diversifying your income really just means different avenues of making money. And I just listed off a ton. And those are all, I guess, all of them. Who knows? They're ones that I want to get into. Essentially, I just want to start diversifying my income more. The next question is about content strategies and audits. How do you do yours? Strategy-wise, I plan out everything quarterly, so 3 months at a time. And here's the thing, though, too, is like I'm pretty good at staying in my own lane. So planning things out 3 months at a time is not really absurd to me because I know my brand, I know myself, I know what I want to put on the internet, I know what I want everything to say about me, I know the person that I am, obviously all of those types of things. And I find it easy to plan quarterly because I'm not influenced as much by external factors. I'm not influenced as much about what's happening in the world or what is trendy or XYZ. Obviously, when I sit down to do the things that I have planned, I can see if they're relevant or influential, or maybe I can make them more relevant or XYZ to whatever is going on. But for the most part, I'm really good at staying in my own lane and understanding what I bring to the table and doubling down and capitalizing on that versus waiting for the world to kind of tell me what is trendy and I try to hop on the bandwagon as it whips by. Strategy-wise, like I said, I plan it out every single quarter and I strategize content based essentially on what I have already done. And I look at the back end analytics. If you guys know me at all, if you've been in any of my Clubhouse rooms, you guys would know I'm a big analytics fiend. I love analytics. I love to look at the data and understand where things have thrived, where things have fallen short, why, all of those types of things. So I will look at that and I will extract the winning points of everything. And I will look at this for every single platform I have, Instagram, YouTube, the podcast, TikTok, all of it. I will look and I will extract all of the winning points on my own. I will do this first. I always make sure to do this first before I look anywhere else. I look at what I've already done and what has gone well. And once I've done that, I then will go out and I will ask the people and I will put a bunch of question boxes up on my Instagram, or I'll do a TikTok and I'll ask a question, or I'll, you know, send an email or whatever. I will ask questions to my audience because at the end of the day, you guys also too are a huge driving factor. Like I obviously want to make content that you guys like and you guys will consume. I then go on and I ask you guys what you want to see. What do you like? What do you not like? What do you want to see more of? What is something that maybe you would like to see me do that I'm not doing? What do you want to see me do in the future? What products do you want me to put out? How long do you want a YouTube video to be? Do you like vlogs? Do you like sit downs? How long should a podcast episode be? I ask all of these things because they're all data points that help me to strategize my next 3 months. And I do this every single fucking month. Actually, I shouldn't say I do that every month. I do the question boxes every quarter, but I do look at the analytics and I look at everything month over month. Before I get too much into that, what I do after I have the question boxes and I've already kind of looked at the audits and stuff like that, I combine the two together to create a strategy from there. So I look at what I've already pulled out in the data in terms of what is winning on all of the platforms, and then I cross-reference that with what everybody has already said, and I figure out like a winning strategy from there, and I plan that out for the next quarter. And so like I was saying, I do, at the end of every single month, I do look at the analytics and see, okay, well, I just did a quarterly audit. This is what the people said they wanted more of, less of, XYZ. And then I look at the data points and I say, okay, is this something that they wanted more of? Was I doing more of it? But is it actually performing well? And should I continue it? And then I kind of just go from there and I tweak and I figure it out and I look at the data and I figure, I guess, everything kind of out from there. And then I adjust the strategy accordingly. So I'm never married to the strategy when I do everything quarterly. I do adjust it month over month, but I do find I like to ask for feedback quarterly and then I adjust the strategy monthly. And that is how I do my content strategy and my audits, to kind of work simultaneously hand in hand with each other. Next question is, how do you do the internet without getting distracted or caught up? I get distracted, obviously, like anybody else. I obviously also do have ADHD, so I can definitely get distracted and go down a whole rabbit hole. However, here's the thing. I find that I have a very solid daily, weekly, morning, night schedule slash routine, and that kind of stuff helps me a ton. If you guys haven't listened to my morning routine episode, I really encourage you to go and listen to it. I really break down my morning routine and how it sets me up to have success for the day. And also, I would love for you also to listen to the ADHD episode that I did recently about going off of my medication and then back onto it. I talk a lot about routines and systems and schedules in there too. And I think that both of those episodes combined really do help me to be the person who doesn't let myself get distracted or caught up or I guess veer off what I need to do with social media as a person who works in social media, because that can totally be hard. You're sitting there and you're like, okay, I'm scrolling trying to find a TikTok sound, or I'm scrolling trying to like identify trends, or I'm doing these things. But at what point am I scrolling for work? And what point am I now getting sucked into entertainment? And obviously, like, I'm a regular person. I still enjoy social media like a regular person. During the work hours when I have to put in the work and I have to do these things, like I need to put in the work. I need to not be distracted. And so having my very solid daily and weekly routines and my schedules and all of that really, really helps me a lot. And so I know for me personally, when I sit down in my office, it's time to work. It's time to work. And I find myself doing a lot less scrolling. I don't even feel like I do it super intentionally, but even when I'm in my office, I don't really pick up my phone as much. My do not disturb is on probably most of the time. I'm really only checking my phone when I'm outside of my office. Maybe it's a bathroom break and I'm scrolling, or maybe I'm in my kitchen and I'm scrolling and I'm doing these things, but rarely do I actually sit at my desk and hold my phone and get lost in the scroll, because I know when I'm in here, it's time to work, and that is that. I think that too, this is really important, because I think that compartmentalizing like your space, especially if you work from home, having those areas where you just do work or you just do one thing more or less is actually very important. For me personally, I have an office, obviously. So I sit in here and I work in my office. And once I'm done, I rarely come back in here. And I also really try not to do any type of things in my bedroom that is not sleeping or anything bedroom related, because I also don't want to feel like I can work in my bedroom, because that's unhealthy. I don't want to feel like I can do work in my bedroom or I can sleep in my office. Like, that just, it's counterproductive. I think that by having these boundaries in terms of like actual physical boundaries of like rooms and stuff like that, it helps me a lot. But also too, having actual work boundaries where I know when I sit in my office, I am doing work. And once I'm done for the day and I'm like, okay, I'm done working for the day, I can get lost in the scroll and I can do those things. And those are the boundaries that I've set for myself. I know that once I'm out of my office and once it's past a certain time, I could scroll on TikTok for fucking 6 hours if I wanted to, but I probably won't, but I could if I wanted to, because I'm already done my work and I've set the boundaries, and I essentially let myself do social media like a normal person and get lost in the scroll, but I don't do it when I'm at work. And I think it's just because I've set up my systems in that way, and I've given myself boundaries, and it's very important, and it's really helped to translate to me being more productive and me not getting distracted or caught up or whatever in the scroll when I'm supposed to be doing other things. Next question is, how do you budget yourself accordingly on a month-to-month basis as an influencer? If we're being completely honest, I don't have a budget. And this might sound absolutely wild, but here is the thing. This is about to change for me, because I am a corporation now and I'll be paying myself a salary. So I probably will have more insight on this a little bit later. But with how everything was like set up before, when I was a sole proprietorship, every single dollar that I made in my business went through my personal bank account. So every cent that I made went through my personal bank account. And because of that, I would have sporadic months. I would have months where I was making XYZ dollars, or like a very high amount or a smaller amount or whatever. And I almost couldn't budget because of that. But now that I'll be having a salary and I'll be having this like corporation that pays me the same amount every single month, it'll make it a lot easier for me to have a budget. But when I was having basically every dollar go through my personal bank account, my biggest strategies were always save first. And this is so ironic because I never used to save money ever. I've talked about this in the way of like mindset about money and always thinking that money will be there. And I've never had a period where money has not been there. And I'm very blessed for that. I'm not like trying to brag or anything, but my mindset has always been like, there has always been more. And so because of that, when I was younger, I would just burn through cash. And as I got older, I really realized the value of saving. And my biggest strategy, like I said, was always save first. So the biggest drivers were, of course, save 30% of my brand deals, but that wasn't even like the first one. My biggest driver in saving was to make sure that I had 6 months of rent in my savings at all times. And that was because obviously I was self-employed. It was my first year being like a full-time influencer who also lived on her own, who like didn't live at her parents' house, all this stuff. And I was like, fuck, like, I at least want to always be able to pay my rent. And so that was my first driving factor, was making sure I had 6 months of rent saved in my bank account. After that, it was taxes. So after I hit my 6 months, I then started doing the 30% and doing all those things because rent and savings and whatever was like the priority at that time. And I just like would rather have put all my money into that than try to split it up and see them both grow at different rates, whatever. So that was the priority. The second one was taxes. And after that was kind of done and I had a handle on that, then it was my RRSP, then it was my TFSA, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And that was my mindset. It was always save first. And then I kind of got into a habit of always having at least $1,000 in my checkings account, but really never more. So whenever I got paid from anything, I would make sure I put it into my taxes. I put it into my like rent savings. I put it into XYZ. If I had bills to pay, I would pay the bills. And then if I had leftover money, I would just put it into probably my taxes savings account. And then I would reset my bank account at $1,000. And then that would just be like the money that I could like play around with and spend or whatever, keep, who knows, whatever it was. And I've kind of continued with that. And it makes me, I guess it's kind of like a budget, but it's like a revolving budget because I could get paid four more different times after that. But I always have that $1,000 in my bank account more or less. But like I said, I know I'll have a budget soon because I will be paying myself a salary. So maybe I'll have more insight on that. Up until recently, that was really my whole mentality, was save first. And that's the strategy that I had. Next question is, which platform or person helped you to propel your growth? And if you know me, and if you've been around for a while and all of this, you guys would know it was absolutely TikTok was the first driving catalyst of my growth in 2019/2020, followed by Reels in 2020. I would also say that probably too in 2019, like start of 2019, YouTube was a catalyst as well because I grew a lot in my first year of YouTube. I think I gained like 6,000 subscribers or something like that. I would say YouTube, TikTok, and then Reels. So my TikTok popping off, going from like zero to 40,000 to whatever, now it's at 278,000, that helped me grow all of my other platforms accordingly. So I was able to push those followers off of the TikTok app onto Instagram, onto YouTube, onto the podcast. And that really helped me in multiple facets. Obviously, my TikTok was growing, but so were all of my other platforms. And that was a platform that really helped propel my growth in other places. And then also too, at the start of 2021, my Reels is what really pushed me as well. January, probably 2021, is when I grew an extra 12,000 followers from Reels popping off. And this was really like, obviously a lot because Instagram was pushing it and it was new and I just hit it at the right time. I think that is kind of where we're at with YouTube Shorts right now, and I really should be getting on that. But those are kind of the things that helped propel me to the growth that I'm at now. But actually what I think is very funny is since this like boom of growth, I've actually only lost followers on every single platform. And it's not to say that I'm not gaining followers. I've just been losing out more often. So I could gain 200 followers, but lose 300 that day type of thing. And it's a little bit disheartening, but also too, everything is a cycle. I know that I'm kind of just in like a downward cycle right now. I'm in the depression. I know that I will have an upward cycle again. It'll be back. I'll be back on a growth period, but that's kind of just where I'm at. Next question is, how long did it take until you started seeing results/growth? The answer is years, okay? I, at the beginning of this episode, gave you guys a TLDR, and I told you this is my 8th year of social media, and it is. I started as a blogger, then I quit my job, and blah, 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 all those things, okay? 2019 and 2020, they were the times where I finally started seeing growth, which really directly, like I said, was because of things like TikTok and because of Reels. But my TikTok popping off probably in 2019, the end of 2019 to the start of 2020, when I really started to see actual growth and actually be able to be like, oh, I am seeing the growth that I knew I needed to take the business where I always knew it would eventually be. Because this is my 8th year, it has took me 5 years of solid hard work before I started reaping any significant reward. Obviously, I probably made a couple hundred bucks here and there, but it took me 5 years until I could replace my income, essentially, or have a career that I could actually live off of that wasn't like peanuts. And for the last question, I'm sure you've all been wondering. I'm sure you've all been thinking to yourself, Carly, I guess you're not Carly. I guess you've all been thinking to yourself, I wonder how much money Carly makes. I wonder how much money she makes in a month, in a year. What does it look like? What is the influencer pay transparency? And here it is. Here's the answer. I also would like to make a disclaimer before I answer this question. Y'all asked me, okay? You guys asked me. This is not me coming on here and bragging or whatever. Y'all asked me, okay? Okay, thank you so much. Obviously, being self-employed, it comes with different pay during different periods and stuff like that. We have low periods, we have high periods, we have non-guaranteed income, essentially, because we are not corporately employed or traditionally employed where you work for a company who consistently pays your salary, who obviously is making the money to pay you, and you get it, right? Like, I'm self-employed. So, that being said, I signed about $315,000 in brand deals last year alone. That is about $26,000 a month. Now, for me personally, I don't really see the value in telling you how many brand deals I signed and the amount of money that it equated to versus the amount of money that actually hit my bank account. Because what I think that a lot of people forget is that influencers are contractors, essentially, and we have payment terms. So I could finish something and then I'd get paid 30 days later, 45 days later, 60 days later, whatever it looks like. Just because you sign XYZ amount in this time frame doesn't mean you're getting paid all of that out before December 31st. Of that, probably $315,000, about $250,000 of that actually hit my bank account. And if you average that out, because obviously, like I said, you have higher months, you have lower months, all of that. If you average that out, that's about $20,000 a month on average of like $250,000. Now, here's the thing. It's a lot of money. I totally get it. Here's the thing. Because I was a sole proprietorship, so essentially every single dollar went through my personal bank account and I was not set up as a different legal structure or corporate structure or tax structure, was in a tax bracket, put me at 47% total income tax, which is about $120,000 in taxes off of $250,000. Isn't that fucking crazy? I was in a 47% income bracket. Now, here's the thing. I probably won't actually pay $120,000 in taxes this year, okay? We have write-offs. There's a bunch of other things that I contributed to my RRSP. I have receipts I can write off. I have my accountant. She, like, that's her whole job, so I don't owe a bajillion dollars to the government. But you also have to remember that, yes, because like I had every single dollar hit my bank account. I didn't have the CPP or the EI or the tax or whatever taken off, but I have to still pay my taxes. I still have to pay and contribute. It seems like I'm making a lot. I am making a lot, but it seems like I'm making way more when in reality my take home is different because of taxes. And like I said, I'm different now. I am a corporation, so there are different tax structures and percentages for corporations specifically. I still have to pay my taxes. I will still actually, when I'm a corporation, I pay myself a salary. I have to pay all of the taxes on the corporate side as well as on my individual employee side. So I have to pay my contribution for CPP, EI, all of that as Your Girl Carly Inc. And then I also have to pay on my actual physical paycheck as Carly, I have to pay into my CPP and my EI as an individual as well. So that's where you see the reduction of, like, let's say you get paid $1,000, but after taxes, you get paid like $800. I still have to pay that, but now on both sides because I own the company and I'm getting paid by the company. Like I said, I probably won't have to pay $120,000 in taxes. However, I've already remitted money to the government. I sent $15,000 to the government already. I probably am expecting to pay another $30,000 to the government already. I paid $23,000 in taxes last year, combined with my income and my GST tax. And I probably will pay, I want to say, close to $50,000 this year in my income and my GST, maybe more, I'm not even sure. That is the answer to how much money I make. And also to the little curtain pullback reveal of, yeah, I make money, but also to here are the other additional things. I'm not just getting this straight cash and just calling it a day. With that being said, it takes us to our last question. I hope you guys enjoyed this Q&A. I actually found this fun. I think this is like one of the first ever Q&A episodes that we have done. And if you want me to do more, let me know. Slide into my DMs. Like maybe we could do like a topic or like an Ask Carly type of situation. If that is something that is interesting to you, make sure to hit me up in the DMs because I would love to do that. But I thought this was fun. A good little Q&A. And now you know basically everything about me and my business. And I hope that was great for you. And I hope that you have a way better understanding of me, my business, the influencer world, and all of that. That is it for today's episode. I really hope you guys enjoyed it. If you did, make sure to screenshot this episode and share it over on Instagram and tag me at Hey Bitches Podcast. I would absolutely love to chat shit in the DMs with you guys about today's episode. Before you go, make sure to subscribe to Hey Bitches wherever you listen to podcasts. And if you are an Apple Podcast listener, make sure to give the show a 5-star rating and review. It really does help me out and I would really appreciate it. I love you guys so much. I hope you guys have an incredible day. And for now, bye-bye, bitch.